Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Melissa Carvel-Zimmer. It's my privilege to serve as the minister of this congregation. I'm joined in welcoming you this morning by Ted Benida, who's serving as our worship associate, our director of religious education, Karen Lapidus, our music director, Hal Walker, and the Fallow Time Folk Orchestra, who have prepared some wonderful music to share with us today. We kindle our chalice flame this morning with great gratitude for these warming days as the glory of spring returns.
Cleveland Orchestra.
Subsequent to his receipt of the Nobel Prize in 1981, the psychobiologist Roger Sperry turned his thoughts to one of the still outstanding questions in neuroscience, namely, what is consciousness? He took issue with the long-standing behaviorist view, which held that consciousness can be understood in purely objective terms, with no reference whatsoever to subjective, or what some might call spiritual experience. He suggested instead that consciousness is an emergent property. Emergence is known to occur whenever two or more entities, be they atoms, molecules, nerve cells, or ideas, interact to create an entirely new entity, formerly non-existent in the universe. Just so, as a result of our nerve cell interactions, we have all sorts of ideas flying around in our brains, and when these ideas interact, they emerge as an entirely new and unique entity. This newly formed entity then feeds back onto our brain and changes it from moment to moment. Thus, your brains will be measurably different when you leave today's service than they were when you entered. Consciousness, then, can be viewed as a dynamic state of becoming. Who are you? You are who you are as a result of your relationship and interaction with everyone else in the community. We literally become who we are together. Come, let us worship together.
The 13th century Christian mystic Meister Eckhart to lead us into a time of silence, meditation, and prayer. The hope of loving. What keeps us alive? What allows us to endure? I think it is the hope of loving or being loved. I heard a fable once about the sun going on a journey to find its source, and how the moon wept without her lover's warm gaze. We weep when love does not reach our hearts. We wither like fields if someone close to us does not rain their kindness down upon us. And we celebrate this morning the Coomerleys, who have been members of this congregation for many years and who are moving away to Pennsylvania for a new job for Beth, and we will miss them. And I invite you to join with me now in the spirit of prayer. Spirit of life and of love, spirit of mystery and wonder, help us to center your love in our lives. Beginning with ourselves, help us to respect, to love and honor our own bodies, to nourish them with food and rest and exercise, to honor our feelings no matter what they are, to honor and trust our own experience. Help us to center love in our lives, practicing most especially with the people we see every day, our friends and family, practicing love by being generous, offering to help when help is not requested, extending kindness, gentle words, helping hands, every day with the people we see and love in our daily lives. Help us to center love in our lives, reaching out beyond those closest to us, to the wider community, people we know and people we don't, practicing an ethic of love by being patient, giving others the space and the time that they need, by being caring, showing compassion for those in our community, by being generous, sharing what we have with those in need, most especially with those who will not know that we have given of what we have to help make their lives better. Spirit of life and of love, spirit of mystery and wonder, help us to center love in our lives. Help us to practice an ethic of love. And by this, help us to bend the moral arc of the universe a little more toward justice. Amen. And blessed be.
Come my way, a way that takes me past all my escape routes, a way shadowed by mountains serenely floating overhead, and with flattened molehills all around me. Come my truth, a truth that has no loopholes or moth holes or frayed edges, a truth as exciting as fire and as bright, as powerful as water, and as fluid, as solid as earth, but as transparent as air. Come my life, a life that devotes itself to love, a life that coaxes and ungums the works and gets me to waltzing on the hot coals of my amazement, a life that precedes all the words of my mouth and survives them into silence.
In 1897, the French artist Paul Gauguin completed a painting he considered his greatest work. He inscribed the title on the top of the canvas, "Where do we come from? What are we? Where are we going?" They're big questions, questions with as many responses as respondents, but with no final, universally agreed upon answers. Each of those three questions must ultimately give way to mystery. Last week, we began our exploration of mystery by considering that first question, where do we come from? Today, the second, what are we? We can start by saying that we're human beings, and that part of what makes us human beings is our consciousness, which leads immediately to the question, well, what is consciousness? And as Ted shared with us earlier, that's a question that has many intriguing and compelling answers, but none yet ultimately accepted as the final answer. That's not a problem for the ordinary person on an ordinary day. I know what it's like to be me. You know what it's like to be you. We have places to go, things to do. We know how to go about living our lives on a daily basis. But every now and again, a time comes, or maybe a season, that causes us to pause and reconsider, causes us to dwell with those big questions. Questions like, what are we? In such moments, my own questions are related, though slightly different. In such moments, I find myself asking, well, who am I now? And how am I called to live? The hymn that we just sang resulted from an Anglican priest, George Herbert's wrestling with just those kinds of questions. The words in the poem that Herbert wrote, that are now the hymn that we just sang, were written in 1633, and they're entitled The Call. We can hear the text as a call from the poet to God to come dwell within, and we can also hear the text as a meditation of the poet's own heart, a reflection on his own calling to live a life filled with truth and joy and love. When Ralph Vaughan Williams set The Call and some of Herbert's other poems to music almost 200 years later, he honored the spiritual questing of the work by titling his composition Five Mystical Songs. Another 100 years later, Mark Bellatini was inspired to craft his own meditation on the questions in the reading that Ted just shared with us. How are we called? It's an enduring question. One of the most enduring responses can be traced back over two millennia to a humble peasant named Jesus of Nazareth. Jesus lived in a time of extraordinary tumult and incredible violence. The world he knew was marked by political, social, and economic oppression. Exploitation was the order of the day, and it trickled down the rigid social hierarchy so that those at the bottom lived in crushing poverty with little hope for better days and little opportunity. Many people rose up to fight against that system, even though they knew the consequences of revolution would likely be death. Against the odds, many people rose up anyway, fueled by their zeal for God. In his new book about Jesus and his life and times, called Zealot, Reza Aslan explains that zeal was the word that a certain sect of pious Jews used to describe their fierce commitment to free Israel from foreign rule and their uncompromising devotion to the sovereignty of God. Aslan explains that Jesus was one of a great many zealots who rose up to fight against Roman imperialism and for the establishment of God's reign in the land of Israel. Aslan argues that in many, many ways, Jesus was not distinctive in his efforts. Yes, he was called Messiah. However, Aslan explains that many of those who rose up before Jesus and many who rose up after him also accepted that title, Messiah. That was news to me. To embrace the title Messiah, Aslan explains, was not scandalous because of its theological implications. It was scandalous because of its political implications. The consequences of calling oneself Messiah was essentially to critique the hierarchy that was in place, to critique those who ruled in the name of Rome. It was a risky move. Despite the risk, many messiahs rose up, and Jesus was one of them. It's also true that Jesus was widely known as a worker of miracles. This is one of the things that all of the authors of the four Gospels agree upon. Jesus worked many wonders. But here's another thing I learned in reading Aslan's work. At the time of Jesus' life, wonder worker was an acceptable occupation. Not only acceptable, but a skilled occupation, and one in which a person could make a decent living. At the time, there were many people who were skilled in the craft of healing, of laying on hands, of conducting exorcisms. Now, most of the people who did these wonders were associated with the priestly class, and the priestly class had many levels. There was the upper echelon of the priestly class, but there were lower classes of priests as well, and so people could make a living being wonder workers. What distinguished Jesus's miracles was that he performed them for free. This is one of the keys, Aslan believes, for understanding the importance of Jesus. By offering healing for free, Jesus was throwing out a powerful critique of the priestly class who offered healing ritual for a hefty price. The priests represented God with their healing, but they also received significant profit for their efforts. The top priests were among society's elites and partly responsible for maintaining the social system, which resulted in so much suffering for those on the bottom. Jesus offered healing for free to the poor and the lonely who could ill afford priestly ministrations. And then he followed up with radical preaching about social justice. Jesus knew all too well that he was bound for the cross. He needed no divine inspiration to know this, for that is where all the other failed messiahs ended up, hanging on a cross for all to see, a warning for any who might dare revolt. Jesus knew his fate, and his followers probably did too. But here's another key to understanding the meaning of Jesus' ministry. Usually, Aslan explains, after a zealot was crucified in that ancient land, his followers went back home to pick up the lives that they had left behind before they became disciples. After Jesus was crucified, something entirely unexpected and out of the ordinary happened. After Jesus was crucified, his followers picked up his message. His ministry continued on in their ministries, and on it went. Unitarian Universalism is a distant child of that tradition. There are individual Unitarian Universalist Christians in our congregations, but as a denomination, I would describe us more as post-Christian today. Many of our contemporary teachings branch off in other directions, but our roots are clearly Christian. So what are we? A contemporary Unitarian Universalist answer to that question must surely reveal our Christian roots. We're people who believe in the ancient quest for justice. We are confident that a better world is possible, and we believe that by our actions, we can help bend the moral arc of the universe a little bit more toward justice. We also believe that we do not live for ourselves alone, and so we think and talk together about how our choices affect the whole. We're confident that together our actions can make a difference in helping heal the interdependent web of existence of which we're all a part. Our ministries are centered upon the quest for justice and the hope for healing. That's our heritage and our vision, too. So maybe you personally embrace that vision because you resonate with that ancient teaching that we are all, every one of us, children of God. Or maybe you embrace that vision because you're inspired by the knowledge that every single one of us is made of stardust. Or maybe you get there because you're moved by the research which suggests that our brains are literally wired for compassion and cooperation, traits which have helped us to ensure the survival of the human race. We come by different paths to covenant. We promise to do what we can to help bend the moral arc of the universe a little more toward justice, to do what we can to help heal the whole. We come by different paths. So how will we do it? How will we work toward that vision? Each of us has to figure out that path on our own too, has to answer for ourselves again and again how we will help heal the whole, how we will help work for justice. And we have to revisit our answers to that question as our life circumstances change. There are many, many right ways to work for justice and for healing. What makes you or me or any of us willing to do that? Willing to work for justice? Willing to find a way, maybe even to sacrifice sometimes in pursuit of that vision is truly a mystery. I don't know why or how, but I know that part of what makes us what we are is our capacity to imagine and to hope and to work to create a larger love that embraces us all. And with Meister Eckhart, I believe it is the hope of loving and of being love that allows us to endure and eventually all of us to flourish. May it be so, and amen. Will the ushers please come forward? I love this congregation. I love these people. All of us together create a beautiful community. And I'm inspired when I see the ways in which others love this community too, put their love into action. One little tiny example I'd like to share with you is this little book created by Michelle Boers, who works in our nursery. It is an ABC book of this congregation. It'll be in our church library. You can check it out if you have little ones in your life or big ones that want to take a look at it too, who like ABC books. A little testament to the love we share with one another. If you're our guest this morning, the offering will now be gratefully received, and we invite you, when it comes, to take a candle from the basket, for we're glad you are with us.
Have you lost all sense of feeling? Have you given up or given in? Are you living or just breathing? The answer lies within. Does love tie you in a knot? Does it seep into your skin? Can it tell you all the things that you forgot? Does it sing the song within? If love is the question you've been wanting to ask, then love is the answer. Yes, yes, yes. Am I a shadow beneath a water wave? Am I a dream inside my mother's eye? Can I ask you just one question? Who am I? Who am I? Does my life make a difference? Am I living to full capacity? If I stopped asking all these questions, who would I be? Who would I be? If love is the question you've been wanting to ask, then love is the answer. Yes, yes, yes. We are living questions, stepping out from the past. Our lives will be the answers and our voices in the future will last. Have you lost all sense of feeling? Hey, giving up or giving in? Are you living or just breathing? The answer lies within. The answer lies within. The answer lies within.
Mindful of our highest aspirations, bound by common faith and purpose, and yet beginning with ourselves as we are, let us take one more step together in our unending quest for dignity, justice, and love.
You are a good and loving people. Go as you go this week, attentive to opportunities to put your love into concrete and specific action. Go in peace.